So I'd like to tell you a little story about during the Buddha's lifetime, there were some practitioners of the Brahmanic faith that came to the Buddha. And, you know, the Buddha was kind of a revolutionary guy. He was teaching in the midst of all this other culture and very advanced religious practice that was going on. And the Brahmins were practiced in the faith where they followed Brahman as the universal god, and that their belief was that when they died, they'd get to be, if they were good, they'd get to be with Brahman in heaven. Sound familiar? Anyway, these stories are not new. So they asked the Buddha, how can we be sure that we get to live with Brahman when we die? And so the Buddha said, Brahman is the source of love. So you need to practice love. And so he called them the Brahma Viharas, or the abode of Brahma. And they're translated for us as the immeasurable minds of love. So these are four practices. And the Buddha said, if you practice the four immeasurable, they're called immeasurable because there's no limit to them. If you practice these diligently, your heart, your mind and heart expand until it encompasses everything. This is non-self. So this is just another facet of the many faceted diamond of the Buddha's teachings. He's saying, okay, you want to look at it this way, you know, love appeals to you, you know, raw investigation appeals to you, this appeals to, you know, whatever. So this is the style which will take you still to the same path, is practicing the four immeasurable minds of love, the Brahma Viharas, the divine abode. It's said that when you practice these, you become happier and happier, and your happiness will transform the world. So these are pretty potent interventions. So the four are love or loving kindness, compassion, joy, also sometimes called sympathetic joy or altruistic joy, and equanimity. So Nagarjuna, who was one of our ancestral teachers, says, practicing the immeasurable mind of love extinguishes anger in the hearts of living beings. Practicing the immeasurable mind of compassion extinguishes all sorrows and anxieties in the hearts of living beings. Practicing the immeasurable mind of joy extinguishes sadness and joylessness in the hearts of living beings. And practicing the immeasurable mind of equanimity extinguishes hatred, aversion, and attachment in the hearts of living beings. So these are clear antidotes to the hindrances, you see, to what's covering up our true radiant nature. So love is a mind that brings peace, joy, and happiness to another person. And compassion is a mind that removes the suffering that's present in another person. We all have the seeds of love and compassion within us. These are wonderful sources of energy that we can tap into. That's why we're trying to clear the slate so we can tap into these. We can nurture the unconditional love that does not need or expect anything in return, and therefore does not lead to anger or anxiety or sorrow. So the first immeasurable mind of love is called Maitri, love or loving kindness. Thay likes to bring back the word love, but I feel like in our society, loving kindness is it's more meaningful because we say I love hamburgers, so you know, we sort of overuse the love word. Thay talks especially about how love is really understanding. This is the wisdom factor, the clarity. And how you can't really love someone if you don't understand them. You have to know what to say, what not to say, what to do, what not to do, what to give, what not to give in any moment. And the only way you can know how to do that is it by understanding your loved one. Tai also says, if you truly understand someone, you can't help but love her. We're all worthy of love. And if we really understand, even that really difficult person that we brought up in our metta, if we really understood, and he has many stories of this. One story that some of us know is about when he, in the Vietnamese people were coming across, to Thailand as boat people escaping from the brutal government. And, you know, they'd come in these overcrowded little boats and with their little life-saving or family treasure. And they would get right close to the shore of Thailand if they were successful and hadn't drowned by then. And then these Thai pirates would go out and they would rob them and they would rape the women and girls. And Tai and Sister Chan Kung were so upset. They went to Thailand and they tried to help these people. They tried to get a boat and help them. And the government wouldn't let them do anything. And when they were there trying to help, there was a 12-year-old girl that was on one of these boats. And the pirates went out and raped her. And she was so distraught, she jumped into the sea and drowned. And Tai was so angry. He did walking meditation all night long. Walking meditation is really good to do when you have strong emotions coming up. You can't often ask your body to just sit in stillness if you're feeling all that turmoil. So he did walking meditation all night long, and in the morning he wrote the poem, which is quite famous, called Please Call Me By My True Names. And this poem talks about how I am also the pirate, you know. And he went back and understood that if he had grown up in that situation, what was causing these young boys to become pirates? They had no, you know, ability to change their terrible situation in their life. They had no resources. They had no education. They had nowhere to go. This was their only hope to get a little something, to get ahead and to make a life for themselves. And he said, you know, if I grew up in that condition, I'd be one of those pirates too. And so that's the understanding that comes. And then he was able to love them, not in a fake way, but authentically feel love and compassion for them as well. And if you, Tai says that it's said by everyone, I don't know who everyone is, but it's commonly said that the next Buddha to come, you know, there's a Buddha supposedly manifests every 3,000 years, and the next Buddha to come is Maitreya, the Buddha of love. And Tai says that the next Buddha is not going to be one being, the next Buddha is going to be a community. Then the second immeasurable mind is karuna, or compassion. And this is, again, a poor translation. There is no good translation for this. Compassion literally means to suffer with, which is not really what we're doing here. You know, we're not, in order to help someone, you don't have to go and suffer with them the same way that they're suffering. You know, like a doctor can help cure someone or heal someone. They don't have to get the disease themselves. They know what to do to provide the healing elements. So compassion is to be with someone enough to know what the healing elements are to offer to them and to offer that. Tai says compassion is a verb. You know, it's actually stepping out with our love and our understanding in order to be present for for someone. I'll talk about bodhisattvas in a few minutes. I'd like to pass this picture around. This is Avalokiteshvara. She is the bodhisattva of great compassion. And her shtick is she listens to the cries of the world. She's the great listener. So we have a practice called compassionate listening that we did a class on. Mary Jane and I did a class on a couple years ago. Wonderful practice of listening, compassionate listening, which basically means that you listen from a place of non-self, from a place of emptiness. You just are present with love for the other person, even if what they're saying is to you wrong or terrible. You just listen only with the idea that simply being heard provides a great amount of healing, and that people have their own wisdom within themselves. You don't have to tell them or fix them. You just give your loving presence. So when we're in contact with another person suffering, compassion is born in us. When we're able to be present and not turn away. So how can we hold all the suffering in the world? You know, the only way that I know how to do that is to realize that I'm not separate from it. That I am part of the causes of all the suffering, and I am part of the conditions and the results of all the suffering. And that, in that sense, I can be an agent of change. I can help heal just by healing myself. So the third one is called mudita, which is joy, sometimes called sympathetic or altruistic joy, and Thay talks about this. I don't remember everything that's in your book, so I may be repeating some of the things he says in the book. But some people say it means joy at the happiness of others. You feel joy when someone else, something good happens to them, which is a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful kind of way to, again, look at your belief system. You know, if somebody got something that you wanted, you know, do you believe that there's only so much of that thing, you know, that's going to make you happy? And so you're kind of like, well, sort of happy for you. But you know, and that's really good. It's wonderful to develop that ability to experience joy on behalf of others. But Thay says also, again, comes back, you're included in this. Joy at your own happiness, you know, experiencing joy. You know, I mean, I know in that guided meditation, nobody said anything about resistance, but, you know, even reading it, I feel like these little twinges, like it's like, now think of the world, and I'm ready to, like, send everything. And it says, how can the world serve me? And I'm kind of like, oh, really? You know, this is all about me. You know? It's really okay, you know. So include ourselves in that. Joy is a really powerful experience to cultivate. And then the last one is upeksha, or equanimity, which is also can be called inclusiveness, and also letting go, being with what is. Yeah, upeksha. The word means looking over, having a big view of things. You know, an image could be the great big blue sky. It means having a heart big enough to include everyone and everything. It's like you think about loving all your children equally. That's what I was talking about when it's like when there's a big enough space of love, then the differences can exist within that space of love, and they're not overwhelming and they don't seem as divisive or real. There's still this bedrock of love. And so that's why another function of metta is opening our heart, so that we can experience equanimity and letting go. You know, we all live in this world of duality. You know, we each have one little, I love that, you know, in our English language, we all have a point of view, you know, and have you ever thought of that? Yeah, it's a point. we come from one point, you come from another point. Everybody's seeing things a little differently. So, you know, this is just where we are. We're all very limited in our view of things. And so to be able to open, you know, to more is very freeing for us and very wonderful. So you can see that all these four aspects of love, to me, they develop, they can be seen as developing. You know, you start with loving kindness, and then the seeds of compassion grow in you, and then joyfulness comes, and then your heart expands, you know. And it can be in a circle, too. You know, they all kind of one feed off the other. Tai says, if you learn to practice love, compassion, joy, and equanimity, you will know how to heal the illnesses of anger, sorrow, insecurity, sadness, hatred, loneliness, and unhealthy attachments. So, that's a pretty big prescription. Yeah. So I just wanted to speak a tiny bit about the Bodhisattva path and share one of my many favorite quotes. This is by a man named Roger Rosenblatt, who he's been a long time, many, you know, 30, 40 years of writer for PBS and NPR and a writing teacher in New York. And he wrote a little book called Making Toast. And it was about the story of, he had a 30-year-old woman and her daughter in her early 30s who dropped dead of a congenital heart defect they didn't know she had. So this was a little book about this, and I don't remember if this quote came from there or what. But he says, so how to live in the world? Wait till the end of the day when the family of swans has sequestered itself under the drawbridge near the no-wake sign. And the light has stalled above the open mouth of the creek so that the sun burns like a coal in ash and the wind is a rumor on your face, your limbs, and you are filled with wonder and remorse. Then go treat the wounded. That's the Bodhisattva path. We come home to ourselves. We know ourselves inside out. We take care of ourselves. We live with the awareness of our wounds, our limitations. And then we step out into the world with compassion. We express our compassion by doing whatever we can. You know? So this is how we develop our Buddha nature. This is how we let it shine. So the Bodhisattvas are our models for this. The Bodhisattvas are archetypes of these qualities that express our Buddha nature. Qualities like great action, wisdom, great compassion. And we have many of these, and we can see a picture of them. You know, she's riding on the waves. The dragon is protecting her. She's riding on the sea of suffering, but she's above it. And her vase is the vase, the story about Avalokiteshvara, a.k.a. Kuan Yin, is that all the Buddhas, she's really a Buddha, and all the Buddhas had created the world. They were here creating the world, this creation story, and they'd all finished creating the world, and they were all leaving. So they were walking out into the cosmos. And she was the last one, and she turned around and she heard the cries of suffering, because there's suffering in our world, duality. And she said, I cannot leave until all beings can come with me. That's the Bodhisattva. The Bodhisattva is the realized being who says, I will not leave until every being can come with me. And she was crying from hearing the suffering, and her tears went into this vase that she was holding, and that turned into the nectar of compassion. So you can pray to her in any situation. or don't use the word prayer if you don't like it, but whatever, you can send your energy, ask for her energy whenever you know you need it, or whenever you want to develop that, cultivate that in yourself to offer it to others. So the most important thing is to realize they are not outside of us. When we do ceremonies, we stand up and we touch the earth to these bodhisattvas, but this is not offering ourselves or bowing down to anything outside of us. This is the quality of loving kindness, the quality of wisdom. I want that in myself. This is setting an intention with my body. I place myself on the earth. I'm open to wisdom coming into me. I'm open to loving kindness and compassion coming into my heart. So that's what that's about. We're calling out the best in ourselves. And we're all baby bodhisattvas if we're aspiring to live this way. And we can also see bodhisattvas in our daily life walking around. It's wonderful to notice the bodhisattva nature in ourselves. That's really just like another one of these cultivating our own love for ourselves and seeing our own nature. You know, what do we just do when we offer a smile to somebody? When we offer a wish for safety or happiness? When we put out our food bags this month? That's a action of a bodhisattva. We're feeding one another in the community. We're all bodhisattvas doing that. And we had a theme on Tuesday night a few weeks ago about bodhisattvas, and Robert pointed out that the flowers are bodhisattvas. They're just there, being who they are, offering their freshness and their beauty. That's our bodhisattva nature. They're just giving. They're just giving, being who they are. So that's really good to notice, to do that exercise of practicing, getting to know our own bodhisattva nature. Not that we have to do anything different, we already are expressing that just in the little tiny kindnesses we do for one another and ourselves each day. So I'd like to end with passing out a copy of a very short sutra, which we remember is a teaching of the Buddha, called the Discourse on Love. You want one? You're gonna want one. And what I'd like to do is to for all of us to read this together out loud, and then we're going, with Robert's help, we're going to play a chant. There's a nun named Sister Tay Nim, who is a wonderful musician, wonderful singer, and she wrote the melody for this chant, put these words to a chant, and sings it with this beautiful voice. So, can I share with you? Are there enough copies? Okay. Oh, you have extra? Great, thanks. So let's read it together. Discourse on Love. He or she who wants to attain peace should practice being upright, humble, and capable of using loving speech. He or she will know how to live simply and happily, with senses calmed, without being covetous or carried away by the emotions of the majority. Let him or her do nothing that will be disapproved of by the wise ones. And this is what he or she contemplates. May everyone be happy and safe, and may our hearts be filled with joy. May all beings live in security and in peace. Beings who are frail or strong, tall or short, big or small, visible or not visible, near or far away, already born or yet to be born. May all of them dwell in perfect tranquility. Let no one do harm to anyone. Let no one put the life of anyone in danger. Let no one, out of anger or ill will, wish anyone any harm. Just as a mother loves and protects her child at the risk of her own life, cultivate boundless love to offer to all living beings in the entire cosmos. Let our boundless love pervade the whole universe, above, below, and across. Our love will know no obstacles. Our hearts will be absolutely free from hatred and enmity. Whether standing or walking, sitting or lying, as long as we are awake, we should maintain this mindfulness of love in our own hearts. This is the noblest way of living. Free from wrong views, greed, and sensual desires, living in beauty and realizing perfect understanding, those who practice boundless love will certainly transcend birth and death. That's not it. That says Discourse on Love.
Got the wrong one, maybe.
Yeah.
Next one.
Because if you have ideas...
That sounds like that's a Dharma talk called Discourse. Yeah. Oops. If you don't have it, you don't have it.
I had it, but...
Mm. There we go. There it is. I was going to have to do it.
She who wants to walk in peace should practice being upright, humble, and capable of you. In loving speech, he or she will know how to live simply and happily with senses calmed, without being covetous and carried away by the emotions of the majority. Let him or her not do anything that will be disapproved of by the wise ones. And this is what he or she contemplates. May everyone be happy and safe, and may your hearts be filled with joy. May all beings live in security and in peace. Beings who are frail or strong, tall or short, big or small, invisible or visible, who are near or far away, already born or yet to be born, may all of them dwell in perfect tranquility. just as a mother loves and protects her only child at the risk of her own life. Cultivate boundless love to offer to all living beings in the entire cosmos. Let a boundless love pervade the whole universe above, below, and across. Our love will know no obstacles. Our heart will be absolutely free from hatred and enmity. Whether standing or walking, sitting or lying, as long as we are awake, we should maintain this mindfulness of love in our own heart. This is the noblest way of living. Free from wrong views, greed and sensual desire, living in beauty and realizing perfect understanding. Those who practice boundless love will certainly transcend birth and death. It is such a virtue, so did they want to suffer down. It is such a virtue, so did they want to suffer down. It is such a virtue, so did they want to suffer down.
So those that last phrase is means, by the firm determination of these words, may you ever be well. So that's our intention, setting intention, sending it off. So our next 5 weeks is going to be on the fourth category of the sutra, the objects of mind. So be shifting gears a little bit. So I think the homework is the exercise 16. So be well. Let's have a bell. I'll have a bell to stand. What? Oh.
Do you need to set up first, people?